how much?
Let me turn my phone.
90 degrees? There's so many things that you just can't do.
Phone calls while we're here.
Can't anymore.
Yeah.
Can you hear me? Welcome to the November 9th, 2023 True Commission. And before we get started with introductions, let me say that the chairman, Commissioner Kashawn Chambliss, will not be here today. Neither will Commissioner Carter. Tommy, you want to start?
Tommy Carter, Council Auditor's Office.
Tony Zabuni, True Commission.
Bruce Tyson, Southwest CPAC.
Henry, True Commission.
Charles Barr, Council President.
Raymond Day, Southeast CPAC.
Delma Roundsville, Northwest CPAC.
Kim Pryor, representing Urban Core CPAC.
Let me make a correction. I said Carter. I meant Carter Jones. Is not going to be here, so Commissioner Jones won't be here. So we have a quorum, right? So our invited speakers, are you either Dustin Freeman or Matt Laskell?
I think I am Dustin Freeman.
So we have Dustin Freeman, Chief of Procurement, and Matt Laskell, Inspector General, may show up. But welcome, sir, and thank you for coming.
I don't think he can. Thank you, Chair. Yeah, on behalf of the Inspector General, he sends his regrets. He can't make it today.
I know we had asked for several, over the last couple of months, several departments, and your department was one of them to show up.
Happy to answer questions. I did get the email from Jeff Clements on the proposed questions. So I could run down them or however you want to.
Yeah, that's good. If you want to run down them, then if we have some additional questions. We're going to try not keeping you here all night.
Thanks, sir. Tomorrow's Veterans Day.
Get you out of here shortly.
For context, everyone, it was so I wanted to prevent myself from asking a million questions like I always do, so I sent my questions ahead.
Thank you.
No, just a couple. I'm over exaggerating.
That's a good idea.
Okay, so if the chair, if you don't mind, I'll go ahead and start going down.
Go ahead.
All right. To the chair, to the body, Dustin Freeman, Chief of Procurement. So first question is, does the city have standard terms and conditions incorporated into the purchase orders and contracts? So the answer to that is yes. The difference, so all purchase orders has about two pages of terms and conditions. The legal contracts have the meat of protection for the city. So the direction that my office gives is, you know, whether you want a contract, a legal contract or a procurement contract will determine what type of protection you're looking for when it comes to risk to the city. So if the terms and conditions in a simple purchase order will suffice, then it's up to the user and agency to determine that. Or if they do need more protection, then they'll get directed to OGC to draft a legal contract. Is the execution of contracts completed electronically, DocuSign, or by wet signatures? So if you haven't noticed in the past, it's going on a year now, I think, the 126 of city ordinance has been going through council. Just a brief history of the bill. Councilmember Cumber introduced it. It kept getting deferred for months on end, and Council President Salem decided to keep it alive and keep it going, thought it was a good bill. So we've been working. We worked with Councilmember Cumber. She was very transparent in the process, allowed procurement, allowed OGC, the mayor's office, to take a look at it, make their edits and recommendations. So we appreciated that. And just recently, in the past 3 months, there have been amendments added to the bill, one of them being local preference, the other being direct material purchase, and the other being a reporting requirement for the CAO, Chief Procurement, to report council all single sources per quarter. So that bill is going to be voted on next Tuesday, final vote, and at which point I have until June 1st to update the procurement manual. So the operating manual.
Interrupt just a second. I don't know what the bill does.
You want me to?
Just very quick, what does the bill do?
Okay.
I just don't know what it does. Do y'all know what the bill does?
It revises the
whole bit. Oh, the whole procurement revision. Never mind. I thought we were talking about the wet signatures versus.
I'm going to get to that. Okay. So that I have to get to the bill before I can get to this wet signatures question.
Sorry.
That's all right.
Go ahead.
So that said, the current 126 is just completely torn up in the garbage. We got this new procurement bill that I believe is going to pass. Well, what does that mean? I got till July 1st to update this. There's requirements in here, a lot of good stuff, electronic format, the capability of electronic signatures is in there for me. We're currently looking at DocuSign. We've had industry days with Adobe, DocuSign, trying to get a requirement together. And basically the entire operations of the procurement division is changing. And I've got till July 1st to update this manual to make it jive with the new ordinance. We are currently working with Oracle Fusion. So for you, those of you that don't know, the city's ERP system is Oracle Fusion. It's a SaaS solution. One of the modules is a procurement module. They also have a enterprise contracting module that hasn't been turned on yet. So the capability is in the system for electronic signatures, for the workflow of start to finish, pre-solicitation, solicitation, pre-award, award, and contract administration all the way to contract closeout. That capability is available in this system. It just had the light switch hasn't been turned on yet. So we're currently in discussions with Oracle building out the rest of the formal solicitation templates to be implemented, I would say, maybe Q2 of next year. So by end of March, don't quote me, anything I said here is not official unless it's issued an addenda. I'm hoping by the end of March we will have 100% of the city's solicitations to be done online. That includes bid submittal. When they implemented ERP back in 2020, they only did one solicitation template, which was the ITQs, invitation to quotes. That's for informal supply bids only. It's like the easiest template to build, and left it to me to build the rest of the templates. So we're almost done with that. I'm very excited about it. It's going to make the process extremely efficient, and implementing Adobe or DocuSign as part of the contract, the enterprise contract module, when we turn that on, it's going to go straight in the system from the using agency submitting a requirement to procurement doing the solicitation 100% online, the supplier base uploading bids electronically, bid opening being done online, award happening online. So one thing that, to answer your question about what this bill does, there's a lot of things it does. One of them is it's increasing the formal threshold to $150,000. It's combining the awards committees. Right now we have three. So it's going into one committee, Jacksonville Procurement Awards Committee, which increases transparency, makes it more efficient for my staff when it comes to building the agendas. So I'm really excited about that too. Come Tuesday night, they're going to fire that gun, and it's up to procurement to make this thing operational. So next question is, the procurement manual reference print all documents when forwarding documents OGC. So the contracting module hasn't been flipped on, so we're still in that historic process of printing everything out, hand delivering it to OGC for contract execution. The next question is, the procurement module references contracts being sent to departments for review and distribution to the supplier for signature. Is that done simultaneously, or does the procurement provide feedback prior to the supplier's signature? So we're not involved in the contracting phase. City's procurement division is involved in pre-solicitation, solicitation, pre-award, and award. Once the city awards a contract, it goes to OGC. OGC establishes the agreement, gets the wet ink signatures bilaterally, and hands it over to the using agency who administers the contract. Does the procurement division provide the inspector general with all executed agreements, as does for OGC and the council auditor? Again, once we award, once procurement awards, we're the awarding authority. There's, I like to call it the two A's. You know, the two awarding authorities for the city is city council or chief of procurement, the awards committee. So after we make that, we give that authority for award, the administration of the contract, goes from OGC straight to the using agency. We're not involved in it.
Well, ultimately, the approval of the award is the mayor's office, is it not?
That is correct.
It has to be signed off with the mayor.
Yes, sir. Yeah, we are a recommending body to the mayor who has final approval authority. Let's see here. Does the procurement division? Okay, we got that. So we're going to the contract execution, public transparency. Are executed contracts stored in Oracle One Cloud? Yes, they are. Can the online interface currently be currently available to the public to display executed purchase agreements and executed orders, purchase orders? So the way One Cloud is now, it does have everything we've done since implementation in 2020 is in the system. It is the city's financial system of record. Every purchase order, every agreement, every contract is in the system. Is it externally accessible to the public? No. With this bill, and part of what I'm doing is implementing complementary software to make that accessible on our website, which will pull abstract from Oracle Fusion to an external website, probably on my existing website, to do that. The way it's done now, I mean, if you go to the procurement website, you could see some current solicitations there, some previous solicitations, some contracts. It's all done from legacy databases. And the bill, what you'll see throughout the city is there's bills being revised to keep up with current state of city operations with this new system. And that's exactly what's going on in this 2023-0020 bill, the procurement bill. So the next question is, can the public online portal include written concurrence and the division recommendation memos for executed POs and contracts? So again, right now everything's in the system, all the agreements, all the backup documentation. Now, anybody can call procurement and request this stuff via public records request or whatnot. But just having it readily available to the public on a website from your house, at any given, that we're not there yet. We're in the process, and I'm hoping we will be there in the near future. Let's see here. Does the procurement division have a contract management system to track? Yes, we do. It's One Cloud, but we also have a access database called Bid Tracking. Again, OGC is where you're going to find. They have their own contract management system. They're the contract executors for the legal contracts. KHA also has a contract management database as well. I don't know exactly what they're using. But everything is, the idea is, we've invested so much money in this software solution, Oracle Fusion, that we're trying to get the best use of it, and just eliminating stovepipe operations throughout the city. Okay, contract administrator or contract managers, administrator does departments designate. Am I good on time or? Do departments designate contract managers, administrators for all department agreements? Yeah, that's up to the individual using agencies. They determine. One thing that this bill does do is pending budget, it is going to require the procurement division along with OGC, the inspector general, council auditors to develop a contract administration training program and certification program. So what that means is it's going to be housed in procurement for every contract administrator in the city. In order for them to be certified as a contract administrator, they're going to have to come through procurement, get trained, and get certified. It's up to me to develop that training and that certification process, whether it's a tiered, you know, level one, level two, level three. I come from the federal space prior to the city, so I'm used to the, you know, the FACSI and the DWEA certifications for, you know, using the FAR and the federal regulations. So I might mimic some of the training requirements there. I don't know yet how I'm going to do it, but the new bill calls for that. They also call for, and this is, I guess, why you guys included the IG, and I told Matt I'd speak on his behalf, but it includes a contract risk assessment program where the city's required to, well, procurement with OGC and Inspector General to identify high-risk contracts. I've been, you know, thinking about how I'm going to do that. I'm thinking, you know, SWOT analysis, something to that degree. I mean, you know, everybody's contract is high risk, in my opinion. So, I got to figure that out, and so I can get it in the manual. Again, all this has to be vetted and done by June 1st, at which point I got to hand deliver to the council auditors updated manual for comments to be fully operational by July 1st. All right, let's see here. I think we're
saying that. Does that mean anybody that's going to bid on your projects has to be certified or trained by you, or are you talking about internally?
Internally, yes, sir.
Internally,
the contract administrators. So, you know, Public Works, you know, whoever is administering their contracts internally, in order for them to continue to administer those contracts, they have to come and get certified, get trained through procurement. A lot of what you'll find is there's a lot of turnover in the city, and contract administrators, a lot of the times it's kind of like, you know, tag your it kind of thing. New person comes in, oh, by the way, this is your contract. There's no training. There's no, now they might have internal, you know, stovepipe type training, but there's nothing organizational about the training. That's what we're trying to do. We're trying to cure that.
So this is something different than what we call the buyer traditionally from procurement. That's the buyer that's responsible for bringing it on the procurement side, you know, for
yeah. Yeah, so in procurement, in the procurement division, we have, you know, buyers or analysts. The buyers do the informal bids, but they don't do anything with contract administration. We only award the contracts. We don't administer them.
Mr. Pryor?
And you may be getting to this too, but from what I've heard so far, I thought what I got out of it, and it could be wrong, is that once the contract is awarded, you're done.
Procurement?
Yes. And so is that true?
That's true.
Okay. So how is it then we're now talking about contract administrators, because the procurement part's already done, so you're done.
So why does the bill have contract administration for procurement?
Well, we're talking about procurement.
Yeah.
So is contract administration now being brought into procurement?
No, the training and the certification is being brought into procurement, not the actual administration of the contracts. Those are still going to be with the using agencies. We're just going to be responsible for training and certifying. Now, I know what you're thinking. Like, you guys don't administer contracts. How can you train?
Right.
That's a great question that I have addressed, with LaSikia, and that's why there's language in there that says pending budget, because I'm going to need a couple more bodies that have that experience, because I'm the only one in procurement that has – well, actually, me and another gentleman have – they're the only ones that have contract administration experience. So in order to establish that training center of excellence, I'm going to need a couple more people for sure.
The reason that this is coming up for me is that we had Public Works in here last month, and I have issues with some of the quality of the work that's being done by the contractors, and I do not believe that it is up to par.
Yes, ma'am. And so if I could, one of my amendments to the bill, which Councilmember Gay sponsored, was to include a contract performance assessment rating. And I agree with you 100%. There's currently no way the city can, as a $2.5 billion organization, track the performance of suppliers. You have JSO over here awarding contracts. You got JFRD awarding the same contracts. And nobody's talking to one another. So what this bill does is it allows me to figure out either whether it's a piece of software or some internal system, so the city can do this holistically. And in the federal government, they have a system called CPARS, Contract Performance Assessment Rating. And I think the state has a vendor management database or a vendor performance database that they also use. So I'm gonna probably mimic those two in some degree. I just don't know what platform I'm gonna use to do that.
Can I respond to that?
Sure.
So I have a interesting background. I've worked for a state-related agency, and I've also worked in the private sector in procurement, so I've kind of seen how to do it, and sometimes it can be night and day. But the state, to their benefit, has a pretty succinct down program that they do contract administration for all state-related agencies or entities. It's all in state statute. They have to assign, based on a contract value, a contract manager or administrator for every contract that's signed in every agency. And then DMS is the authorizing authority that does the actual training for every single contract administrator in the state. And it's only for a certain number of years that they have to get this training and then recertify every 3 or 4. So the blueprint, at least on the state level, is already there if you want to use that as a mimic. In at least when I was at Citizens, the way that they organized their procurement division is they did contract administration. A lot of agencies do contract administration in-house as well. But you had contract administrators that were responsible for maintaining the life of the contract from start to finish, handling renewals and performance. That was their sole responsibility. You had another group of people that were contract officers that were responsible for the development of a contract from solicitation to completion and also handled amendments and renewals. And then you had another group that was responsible for risk management in terms of the risk-related issues that they have to essentially check off a questionnaire before a contract finishes a solicitation. And then the final piece deals with the solicitation itself, so what you would think as your traditional buyer that handled the solicitation. So there are models that are out there that exist that a lot of state agencies and some counties in the state have figured out how to do it. I'm not saying you need to do something that involved, but there are frameworks that exist to kind of set the standard.
Going back into the 1990s, JEA established that, and they had the vendor evaluation process, and I was their lawyer at the time, and since then, I've been on the other side. But so during the course of the project, you have the JEA already had that program. And after a certain point, you have your first evaluation. So if you're not doing well, you can catch up by the time it gets to the end. Now, what this all means is by the end, if you have an evaluator that does not like that contractor for some good or bad reason, then it becomes the fact they go to getting thrown off the bid list as a not responsible or not responsive bidder. So then you have protests and you have more litigation. But you might really want to see what JEA used for decades as a start for how they evaluated people on the interim basis and then the final evaluation, in addition to the things that Mr. Henry said, which is good from the outside too. But some of that already exists.
Yeah, no, absolutely.
Did you ever think, you know, in reality, you know, you've got some folks too that used to work with the, you know, you've got Mike Clapsaddle, who's over at Gate, Louis Naranjo, who went to the port, and then these are the procurement people, and then, of course, Greg. Are you going to brainstorm with them to try and get some of their assistance to?
I talk with Greg almost every other day. So.
Well, that's not a good thing. I mean, I talk to him many times too. Isabel is much better to talk to than Greg.
But I don't know. He'll probably send me an invoice if I ask too many questions. He's a advice star now. But no, that's a great point, and I'll note that. I'm not really familiar with. I know Clapsaddle and Devin Reed.
Devin, he was in the general counsel's office. Now he's out at the port. Yeah. And you got Lewis too, who was at City of Procurement. Then he retired from the Port Authority. So,
you know, that's a great point and something that, since I've taken this chair, baffles me is all the procurement professionals in the city at the sister agencies and whatnot. I have yet to get on a phone call with everybody or have lunch with all of them. I have yet to do that. I don't even know if there's anything like that available, but it'd be great. It'd be great to have something.
Set it up.
Yeah, I mean, I could if I could get their contact information. I will look at the state. I have been looking at the state, and you know, I've got until June 1st to figure this out. So any input I can get, I'm open ears.
Let me just be blunt because I'm on the other side now. I was on y'all's side for the longest time. The issue that she makes is great. You've got procurement, but if the people administering the contract don't understand the contract and don't administer it properly, it causes a huge problem. And the hugest problem is under Florida law, the sovereign has immunity. You know, so if it's not in the contract or in a change order, then they're left holding the bag. So the training is all good, and of course you're going to have the issue of protests. I assume that'll still be held by any protests would be held by procurement. You go through the procurement department, but it's a.
The bill has given me a lot more authority. So the first iteration of the bill gave me too much authority, and I pushed back and I said I don't want to be looked at as the king of procurement over there on some hill. So they've taken a lot of that back to include. The ability to dissolve protests or cure protests before it goes in front of, you know, an awards committee. But, you know, changes to the manual now at my request are going to go through the committee for approval, mayor's office for approval, council for comment. So the bill has it. They're giving me a little more leeway on how I deal with protests. They will be heard. And again, this is I'm in the process of making the sausage here. I don't know exactly what the manual is going to be like, but I assume that I'm going to need a body to hear these protests, and that body will probably be the JPAC, is what they're calling it.
Well, I think we would love on behalf of us. I mean, this is what I did for all those years. We'd love to see it over here and. A draft of it at some point to try and assist you if we can.
Absolutely, yes, sir. I welcome it.
Just to look at it to see. Another thing, too, that you might want to do, and I'm going to confess I'm the general counsel for the utility contractors, and I'm a member of ABC. You know, you've got these documents, you're going to put them out for bid. It'd be great for people. Everybody knew Greg, but you're new. I would suggest we can do it through True or yourself. Have a town hall meeting. Talk to the folks that are going to be bidding on it to let them know what the changes are. I did notice there's a lot more on trying to get convicted, offenders, ex-offenders involved in making it a requirement and along with some other things. But it'd be good based on keeping your fingers, and I'll be glad if you want to contact me individually or through this, to get those organizations to come in there and just give you a state of the true state of the union of what the labor market is, what supply chain is, so you can get that, not have to guess.
So I welcome that, and I will say that you're bringing up another good point. This bill also requires a biannual survey to the supplier base to figure out how to make things better within procurement. And to piggyback off your suggestion, I'm actually meeting next week with Public Works Director, the JSEB Administrator, at a National Industry Day. I don't know if it's national. It's for, you know, professional design consultants and construction contractors over at FDOT. So we're having an industry day, and that's exactly what I'm going to be talking about. This bill, changes to it, how it's going to affect them. You know, solicitations being electronic now, bid submittals being electronic, you know, what type of format the system allows, and answer their questions. Also go to the JSEB's industry days, answering questions from the supplier base. So I actually helped the Jags today when they had their pre-bid conference for the Stadium of the Future. The geotechnical work that's been done. So, look, I'm looked at. I mean, when people ask you, what do I do as the procurement chief? My job is simple. It's I make sure that there's fairness and competition, that the integrity of the procurement process is intact from start to finish. That's it. And the more I can educate the supplier base, the better I can get the city to get that competition it needs to decrease costs and get the best, most qualified supplier under contract.
Some of the issues you have, too, goes just beyond procurement and the Department of Public Works. I try and watch what's going on. And, you know, the Downtown Investment Authority also has concerns, and they have concerns with folks that are not, you know, the procurement's not going the way that they want. And so the procurement process, I think you might want to consider involving Lori Boyer or that, you know, y'all really need to all get together, and everybody needs to know what's going on there for everybody that's going to use city procurement.
So I gave city council a baseline, start to finish, of time requirements. What does it look like to get a contract executed?
Too long.
It is long, but that's not the fault of procurement. A lot of it isn't. We're relying on the supplier a lot. We're relying on using agencies. I had that baseline in front of me. I'd pass it out. Really explains everything. But right now, the biggest, if procurement was the House, OGC is definitely the Senate. There's lack of resources there. We've addressed this with City Council to get more resources, but we need more contract attorneys in this city, period. They have three people executing every contract, not only for the city, but for most of the using agencies. That's ridiculous.
Well, essentially, from when I was there, too, I mean, Neil MacArthur was the corporate secretary, but all he did was sign. And then generally you had an attorney that would approve a contract, which was provided to them by either by the Department of Public Works or the Sheriff's Office or whatever. Is this anticipating something different on behalf of the General Counsel's Office, more than form approving?
Yeah, they're developing the contract. The using agencies are the ones that are getting the wet ink signature from the supplier, but the actual contract with terms and conditions is done by Jim McCain, Siki Hodges, and Jeremy Brown for the entire city. And, you know,
that's unsustainable, by the way.
So, you know, you're looking at a time frame anywhere from 30. Sometimes 90 days just to get the contract. That's after procurement's done.
Why isn't the contract, I mean, are there specific things within the contract that are subject to who wins the bid? I mean, so forgive me if this sounds, you know, a bit elementary, but, you know, if you're putting out a bid for office supplies or whatnot, it certainly seems to me that you should be able to already have that contract written up. and ready to go and for whomever wins the bid.
So, through the chair to Ms. Pryor.
Mm-hmm.
It depends. It depends on what you're buying. If you're buying, you know, supplies, normally you're not going to need a legal contract. That's up to the using agency to decide. Does the city need more protection when you're buying 100 widgets? Okay, you're going to need a legal contract, or maybe not. A PO could suffice.
Wait, it's not based on a value?
It's on the needs of the using agency.
And
what it is. Now, if there is a piggyback contract, all piggybacks require a legal contract.
No, I get that. So if a using agent, let's say finance wanted to contract with Pricewaterhouse to be external auditors, and the contract was going to be $1 million.
Makes sense to get a legal contract.
Yeah, but they could decide, no, we just decided to want to do a letter and a PO, and that's it.
Yeah, that's probably not going to happen, but yeah, I mean, there's nothing codified saying you need a legal contract for this or you need a purchase order for this.
You know, as far as, I'll just go back to Better Jackson, where I was one of the three attorneys that was negotiating it. Thank goodness, I didn't have the courthouse at that time. But the city made the award, and they said the attorneys will negotiate the terms. Let me just tell you, that was horrific. You know, we had Turner for one, then we had Jacobs for something else. And every contract looked different. The big deal should be is y'all should have general conditions. You attach it to the RFP or the ITB.
Right.
And if you bid it, you're going to agree to these terms and conditions, which are going to be consistent.
Yes, sir. That's what we do.
Which are typically placed in with the bid package.
With the bid. And you're going to sign this, and you're going to have a bid bond. And if you don't, you're going to lose your bid bond.
That's what happens.
Okay.
The purchase order terms and conditions become the contract.
Okay.
The problem is... it's a stovepipe. There are three people in OGC with a mountain of contracts, and then there's fires almost daily. I need this one signed, so this one pulls up here. And it you need more people to execute these contracts. I don't think it's a, you know, we're developing, you know, a very complicated, I mean, some of them are complicated, the contracts, but, you know, I don't think it is because of the type of work. I think it's just the volume, and there's a bottleneck up there.
But, okay, but if the person in procurement takes the time necessary to list out all of the requirements, because that is, my understanding is that everything that's required is supposed to be in the bid package for the contractors. Everything that you know at this time is supposed to be in this package. The time constraints, the dollar amount, everything. So if you know all of that information now, the only unknown is who's going to do the work. Then why can't the contract be written up then? I mean, you have all the information. Is it still a bottleneck at this point? I mean...
That's a question for OGC, but my understanding is it all depends on what you're buying. If you're doing a construction contract, yeah, everything is in the RFP for construction, but there might be different terms that are needed depending upon what type of procurement it is. There might be federal forms required. There might be things that grant money. There could be, you know, the supplier that's wanting to change the terms. There's back and forth negotiation happening.
Yeah, that's what I was about to say. I've never met a vendor that wants to take an agency or any governmental agency's contract carte blanche. They're always going to want to negotiate.
Well, sure, but if you have something already written, then
they always
then you got something to start that. With. You know, you're not waiting for OGC to draft the thing.
Concern is what you're telling me is because as a contractor, and you probably know this, sir, you to do your bid, you get your quotes from all your subs and suppliers. Those are only good for like 30, 60, 90 days.
Right, yeah.
We're now living in a world of supply chain issues, you know, then you're going to come back and you're going to try and hold them to it, and if they say, I can't do it, it's gone up because of this, and there's something that has to be done to make this easier job for you.
I agree.
Without,
I will say in my experience, granted, it's different from the city because, for instance, at Citizens, we have contract officers that are not attorneys that are responsible for contract development. Their legal department just reviews it just to make sure that it's compliant with the law. But their metrics that they set on contracting officers said, you have to have a contract developed and signed in X number of days, and that's what we're holding you to. So there's metrics that a lot of companies set, state-related or not, to try to create some kind of expectable timeline for vendors to know on X date I'm going to have a contract in my hand to sign.
It's unfair to the vendors and the contractors.
I wouldn't disagree with you. Again, I think more resources in OGC is going to fix that problem. It's not a procurement problem.
Well, as Mr. Henry said, and you can have sophisticated people that have gone to school that could do it, and OGC does go back more to once you've done the initial review, if it's the same contract over and over again, unless there's been changes by the code or in state or federal law, which they would watch and notify you for to change, there should be some way to get over this this problem over there.
I think what it is more resources and the enterprise contracting module being turned on in Oracle Fusion. That's going to solve a lot of the problems and timing, in my opinion. Again, I can't speak on behalf of OGC, but that's just my understanding of the problems within, you know.
Well, you're basically going to have a contractor's contract, and you're going to have a designer's contract. I mean, we're not going to go to the AIA or the EJCDCs or the consensus documents. You don't want those. When I was here, when I got here, everything was AIA, and then we changed them all because they were awful for everybody except for the designer. So but you should be able to get one set of general conditions for everybody for those two different things, and it should be easier once you get past that point.
Yeah. Again, I would call Asikia Hodges here and address your concerns with her. She could probably better answer a lot of the reasons why contracts get piled up there.
Can I follow up on something? If you're going to be taking much more of an active role in terms of training city employees to be contract administrators or managers, are you going to be advocating for a resource to be able to be dedicated for that? Because that's a hard job just to kind of pile on to a buyer or a manager.
Yeah, like I said, I'm going to need a couple more bodies in order to execute. Yeah, absolutely. I can't do it myself. I can't. I don't have enough time. There's nobody in procurement now that can do that.
I think that part of the issue here is that there's no clear delineation between where procurement ends and the contract administration stop. Because they've asked you to do this training and everything else, it kind of blurs that line a bit.
So look at it this way. The entire contract life cycle, market research, use an agency. They're responsible for their own market research. Then they get the requirement together. They've built it. Then procurement starts to get involved, pre-award or pre-solicitation. Our bread and butter is the solicitation period. Ex parte silence policy is in effect. Bids are delivered to the city. We have bid opening. We do a matrix with all of the bids, the dollar amounts, the company. We return it to the using agency. It could take them 2 weeks to evaluate. Talking about Lori Boer and DIA. We could open bids for Lori. Hey, we got the bids. Here they are. Come pick them up. They come over, pick them up. It could take them 2 weeks to evaluate it. And then it has to go get on the agenda. And then, you know, there has to be a protest period. And that, you know, we have to post in the Daily Record. Then we have to hear it in front of the committee. The committee has to vote on it. It has to go to the mayor's office. Mayor's office has to sign off on it. After that's signed off, then Lori can go get the contract she wants. She has to submit a contract requirement form to OGC in order for them to generate the contract. Once the contract's negotiated or the terms are ironed out, then it goes back to Lori. And procurement approves the agreement or the PO.
So if Lori picks something, and it wasn't the lowest responsible bidder, the protest would come to you, or does Lori have...
Come to me.
It would come to you. So you would hear a protest of a DIA decision to...
If anything that comes through procurement is going to come to me.
Do you anticipate most of the contracts are going to be ITBs, or are they going to be RFPs? I'm sorry, invitations to bid or requests for proposal, which is one's points and one's just the dollar amount.
I'd say it's about 60-40 at this point, 60 being ITBs, you know, 40 being RFQs or RFPs. And these ITBs, that's including ITQs, right?
Mm-hmm.
I've got a $2.5 billion annual spend. I mean, there's 18,000 transactions going through my office every year. And there's a lot more coming. The city is about to explode, and the CIP budget is, you know, up there. So I'm anticipating a lot of work, a lot of them being ITBs on the construction side, a lot of design build type RFPs, RFQs. But moving forward, everything's going to be in the system, so...
And are y'all going to embrace the ITNs, invitations to negotiate?
Yes, sir, that's in there.
So,
Mr. Freeman, let's just a couple more minutes,
yep.
And then if there's some more questions, then we'll let you go so we can go with the rest of the agenda.
Sure.
Is there any more
questions, Daniel?
No. I'm sorry, I took up your time there. I had the million questions.
I mean, if you want to hit one more of his questions.
Last one on there, yeah. Let's see. Live streaming.
Yes.
Yeah. So we I mean, everything procurement does is live streamed. I mean, our awards committees are all available. You can dial in.
No, that makes sense. I know you do that, but Joe Schoen from the public, because I've tried.
Is what?
Joe Schoen from the public, I've tried. When it comes to after the meeting, the recordings, that's the part where it's very, very difficult to get your hands on.
Have you sent me an email?
No, that it's not publicly posted.
The recordings?
Yeah.
Yeah, they are.
I guess he's asking where.
Where, yeah.
So if you go to the Zoom meeting, they're published on there. Well, it's not a Zoom, it's Teams, Microsoft Teams. So... Actually, belay my last. I think the Teams is the internal posting. So after the meeting happens, the video is posted to the Teams link, and it is not made public unless requested.
That's what I was going.
Yeah.
Why isn't it not public?
I don't know. Putting it on the website. Not required. It's not codified. The technical component of the meeting.
Sneak on in.
That's a courtesy. We're not responsible for technical issues.
No, I get that. I think, from my perspective, just looking at the legislative branch, because they're not even required to do it, unless, Jeff, you tell me if I'm wrong, the city goes through a lot of hoops in terms of city council to make sure that every single council meeting, every single committee meeting, every single member-to-member meeting that a council member has is all publicly available and people can go back and look at. So unless you have time in the middle of the day, if you're not working, it's hard for you to be able to tune into a ward meeting to be able to view it.
Yeah. Well, if you need anything, you can call procurement. We'll give it to you. Now, why is it not on a website like city council? I guess... I have no idea. I do know that our website has all of the solicitations. We do have links to all the meetings to where to access it. I mean,
I would say, like, from the public's perspective, you have all the documents for the solicitation, all that's posted. You have the requirements, all that's posted. The second that the award happens, unless you're in that physical meeting or thereafter, the public view of what a contract ultimately looks like or a purchase order ultimately looks like is only dependent on someone going out of their way to request it.
Right.
So, but for every other entity that I know of that's publicly related, they post that information as
I can't answer the question of why it hasn't been done in the past, but what I can say is in the future, this is all going to be abstract data that's posted to the website because of this system, this new system. We do have contract information on there, on our website currently. It's old legacy type information. But we're looking at a software, complementary software called SmartSheets, that is going to give an external look at everything that the city does contract-wise. We don't have visibility in the contract. Procurement doesn't until OGC executes it, and then we upload it to Oracle Fusion.
Right.
And then, obviously, you know, we answer public records requests all the time.
So we can call your office if we need it, right?
Absolutely.
Bottom line.
The reason why I'm going there is because I think I keep on using the state as an example because this is normal practice. You just said previously that we're going to get to a point where there's going to be a lot more contracts, a lot more purchase orders, a lot more work and dollars that are coming out of the city. I just think it probably makes sense to be proactive to kind of relieve the amount of public records requests that I'm sure you're going to be receiving because people are going to be curious based on dollar amounts that are going to be coming out of the door.
I would invite ITD here. Maybe they can answer your questions on why it's not on the website. But as far as procurement's concerned, I need money. I need dollars in order to do stuff like this. Procurement doesn't have a budget at all. I can't just, you know, magically buy some software and have this stuff readily available to the public. I can't do that. ITD might be able to. I can work with ITD to make that happen. But I can't go out and buy software. I don't have the budget for it. I have to rely on Oracle Fusion. That's what we're having. Or that's what we've bought, and we're married to Oracle now, for better or for worse. But that's the system, in my mind, that's going to solve that problem right there. It's going to make the contracts and everything that's in the system an abstract on the procurement website.
Thank you very much for coming today. Or did you have something?
I did. You tell me, or I don't know if you know this or somewhere else in this administration, what percentage of city contracts come in on budget or under budget and on schedule or ahead of schedule, and what percentage exceed the original contract amount and come in after the due date?
I don't have the percentages for you. Through the chair, I don't have the percentage for you, Mr. Day.
Who would find that? Who would have that?
The using agencies.
We'd have to contact each of the separate departments, so nobody in the city keeps records of what percentage of the overall global contracts for the city come in under or over budget?
I'm sure the using agencies do.
But it's not assembled in one comprehensive report for all the different departments in the city. Thank you.
Anybody else? Thank you very much for coming today, sir.
Mr. Freeman, I hope that I might, if it's okay, I might give you a call and I'll talk to some of the other folks that I was their lawyer for in procurement in the old days and see if they would get together with you for free, unlike Greg, that want to charge you, see if that'd be of some use to you.
Appreciate that. I definitely gonna need it from now to June 1st. So.
Or that we can clone you. How about that? Thank you.
Thanks, sir.
Thank you.
Welcome, Commissioner Chambliss. So everybody, do you want me to keep on? Or? So everybody should have got the minutes. Is there a motion to approve the minutes?
Move approval.
Second.
Like, is there any discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Minutes passed. There's no public comment. Mr. Carter, is there any auditors?
Yes, through the chair, to the commission. Council Auditor's Office has released three reports since the last true commission meeting. However, I won't be presenting one report today due to the other two reports have not been presented to the Finance Committee due to the timing, and I will present those two reports at the next true commission meeting. Report number 812B was a follow-up on the landfill contract audit. Was issued November 6th of 23. This was the second follow-up. And with this follow-up, there were seven items remaining from the first follow-up, and all seven of these items were cleared. And so all the items from the original audit were cleared, and so this will be determined to be, there won't be any further follow-up with it. It'll be closed.
So when are a lot of audits going to start taking place again? You know, we just went through a ton of them, and then they've slowed down. I probably thank God for you.
We stopped working on the audits during budget.
Okay.
And so
they'll start back
now,
soon.
Now they're starting back up. Yes, sir.
So when was the first audit done, and when was the follow-up done?
The first audit.
That's what it was. We have follow-up letters too. It doesn't say that was the audit, though. So. Have that on here.
I don't know when the first audit was performed. I thought I had it, but I don't have it here. I just have the executive summary from the first audit. It was number 812. Okay. I'm sorry. The first follow-up was March 17 of 2021.
The first follow-up.
The first follow-up.
And this audit you just
this
completed.
This follow-up, yeah.
Was completed when?
The report was issued November 6th.
Of this year.
Of this year.
Two and a half years later.
And the first follow-up was 2021.
We sent, follow-up letters to the Chief Administrative Officer on February 22nd of 2023, so work started earlier in the year.
Are y'all that understaffed that when the budget happens, everything just stops? And
well, it's just I don't know about being understaffed, but I mean we have one vacancy in our office, but we have the budget is.
Everything stops.
Everything stops. It takes everything, yes. So, and then the follow-ups are not, the follow-up reports, there are other audits going on at the same time. So there's more than, we've got several audits going on at the same time.
So, okay, thank you.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. Hello?
Yes, ma'am. So and I will say the original audit had 15 items. The first follow up, we cleared 8 items, and then this follow up, we cleared 7. So there was, yes, ma'am.
This brings me back to an item I requested my very first True Commission meeting, where I requested a report of every single audit that we have done where there were
is he finished with this audit and then
well and that's part of my presentation. I have some to talk about what we have.
I want a physical report. I want a listing of all the audits that we have done, the number of defects that were found, when the initial audit was done, when the follow-up was done. I want a report of all that. That's what I want.
I would have to direct you to our webpage. that has every audit report, every follow-up. If you go to the website, you'll see audit 812. Below that, you'll see audit 812A. Below that, you'll see audit 812B. So you can see everything that we have produced on the website.
So I am just flabbergasted that it takes so long to do these follow-ups. And I'm not fussing at you personally, but Jeff just looked it up, and this particular audit was initially done in 2018, and the first follow-up wasn't even done until 21.
Well, as part of what I was going, I guess first off, are there any more questions on the follow-up itself?
Yeah, let's get done with what you're doing, then we'll go into the
on the follow-up itself. Okay, because you're addressing a bigger issue.
Yes.
So I'll address that. Okay, on that part it's done. And I can either address your question or I can go through my whole spiel.
Go ahead and go through your whole spiel. Okay. I'm sorry. I didn't know you had a spiel.
I did. I had said
there was one audit report.
I had said last meeting that I would bring this, and because audit of budget's over and we were able to get together, me and the audit manager and the council auditor. So as an FYI to all the new True members, our office, all our reports were posted on the council auditor's webpage. And every follow-up of the audit is posted on the website below the original audit. So you can see the statuses of what's closed and what's not closed.
Let me interrupt just a second. Mm-hmm. By looking at the website, can I tell, just by without having to open them up, can I tell whether something's closed? Do I have to click on every single audit in order to tell if it's
there
if
will
the
be a
issues
final,
have been closed?
There, I believe you can click on one that has been finalized, closed, and I think there is it'll say out to the side closed. That means that all the recommendations have been implemented. Correct me if I'm wrong, Jeff. It's been a while since I've searched that part.
Yeah, but you know what I'm talking about. I mean, I see all the audit reports, and I don't want to have to open every single one of them to see if the issues have been resolved or not.
Well, if there's three, you know the first two is probably not complete, right? At the very least, you'd go to the last one, right? Like B?
And go
not necessarily.
Well, yeah. If
there wouldn't be a follow-up if it was closed.
If you go to B, what you'll see, if there's an A or B, or mm-hmm. you know, go to B, and what you'll see is just a simple one page with this chart. And over here, it'll say zero. And so that's remaining issues.
Right.
So.
Right.
But
I don't want to have to open that up to see zero.
I understand. Okay, so but what I'm saying, I thought we had added something to the website. No, we haven't? Okay.
Okay, so basically, no, that's why I'm using yours. So anyway, basically, on the website, they're there, the different reports, as well as, you know, the follow-ups. And then lastly, you do have to open it up to find out whether that has been closed or not. You do.
It's not the mic, it's the jack in the floor that's not working. So here's 808 communication tower audit. There's a follow-up, and there's a follow-up B, and then underneath there's in parens all items cleared. Second follow-up. So when it is finally finished, if there are follow-ups,
that
doesn't do that for every audit, so you might not know if there's an audit, if there's a follow-up pending that hasn't been released yet.
Right.
At least for the follow-ups, it tells you when it's finished.
Yeah. And when the follow-up's finished, the original audit is closed. Right. And I had made mention to you, I think, when you had first asked this, you asked if there's a database. We do have an internal database. It's an access database. Basically, it just contains the items that are in our reports. It's just you know, same thing as what our report is. The database is basically utilized. It helps our auditors in drafting the reports and go back. You have a library to, you know, look and write from, things like that. And it somewhat used to track the status. However, given the setup of our follow-up reports, we don't rely on it to track the statuses. Our audit manager, everything, we actually use the website and look at the thing. He goes through and, you know, and that's how he is doing it. So we mainly use our webpage to do that. So I'm not sending you to do anything that we don't do ourselves. And now I will say this, due to the turnover in various departments, especially with the new administration, we are working on trying to send a listing of all outstanding items to the various departments, okay, so that they know, the current managers know, this is what's going on. Now, they may not be responsible for it, but this is what has been found in your departments. And at that, it's I'm not sure where they're at on that process, but this will list any and all out items that are in their areas that are currently outstanding. When we issue that, we can provide a copy to the Troop Commission, to the commissioners, if y'all would like one. Okay. I will give you a caution, though. Does not mean that all areas have not been addressed. And I say that because I'm currently working on a follow-up, okay, that I may... There have been some issues on the follow-up that have been addressed. So I'm not going to write it up in the report. I'm going to write it up as closed. But this is pulling from my – I don't have an issued report yet. There hasn't been a report issued on it yet. So it would still pull in that outstanding issue as outstanding. So that's why I'm saying a cautionary thing. There may be some items there that have – that showed not being addressed, but have been because the report's not been issued. I'm just trying to be, you know, transparent. And then with the length of time for the implementation of the recommendations, I know that's a concern. And we'll just say this. There are some issues that won't be implemented immediately. It's like system changes, a new system being implemented. And there are many other reasons that can take time, and that's like due to employee turnover. But there are also, you know, other issues that might not be an excuse. But we try to set a goal, and we're required just to do a follow up by the Yellow Book. So by Yellow Book, it's the governmental auditing standards. So that's what we do. It's not an audit. We're just basically going in saying, this is what we recommended. Did you implement our recommendations? So that's why I call them reports. Yes, sir, Mr. Day. Okay. And so that's why sometimes it can take longer. Plus, you've got scheduling. The follow-up I was on, I got the information. I'll just tell you, I was started back in the spring. Well, we got lots of council member requests, which is the area I'm in deals with council member requests. You know, that takes priority over what we're doing. So things get pushed back, and it's a juggling act, pretty much, on that.
I'm curious. So when you submit your reports, do the departments, you mentioned there may be a point where they may have already made a change, but it's not updated because you haven't sent a follow-up yet to ask if they've done it. So do they ever notify you, or do they have do you ask them to notify you so you don't have to follow up, or?
No. We tell them that there will be a follow-up coming, and so we send a letter with the findings from the original audit, and we say, okay, what's the status? Has it been implemented, partially implemented, or not implemented? And they will answer either one and give an explanation and send it back to us. So we already know going in, well, I don't have to test this. They haven't implemented it, so I can just put this in the report. The other ones, they say, well, we've implemented this, so we go in and we have to do some work to make sure they did what they said they wanted to do. But yes, we send them a letter.
What's the yellow book procedure on how long after an audit that you do a follow-up?
I don't know the exact time frame of it. We try to do it we try to start it anywhere from 12 to 18 months. We're not always successful, but that's where we start, you know. And when we initiate it, the letters come out, and then they have 2 or 3 weeks to respond. And then so it takes time on the going out. So even though this report went out in November, it started in February
with the initial letters. And then they had to have a couple of weeks to respond. We had to, you know, that.
You
ready?
So so I understand the process. Who audits the city finances? Who performs the external audit for the city of Jacksonville annually?
That firm is CRI, Carr Riggs and Ingram.
And they are a local firm?
They're
considered a regional?
They're bigger than local. They're regional or maybe even national.
So they're not one of the big four?
I don't believe so. No.
So when that annual audit is being done separate from what you're doing, so this audit, these audits that you're performing, they're not related to the financial operations of the city during any given fiscal year.
Now, our audits are strictly performance audits.
Performance audits.
Compliance to internal controls, things like that.
Okay, and you have the yellow book as your standard.
Yes, with the exception of one or two, we do a financial on like the sheriff's investigative fund, things like that.
Okay.
That comes out.
And that yellow book would say what the parameters are for doing these audits, and it would recommend a time frame during which the entity being audited has to respond and give you an update on how many of the items they have cleared. And you're saying that's 12 to 18 months?
We try to give, but depending on, you know, size and things like that, because you have employee turnover, you have change. I'm saying that as far as I know, that's our policy. I don't know if that's a yellow book policy.
That's city policy.
That's our office policy.
Your office. Okay. That seems very generous to me.
It's actually fairly tight for someone. Well,
tight?
I would say to implement some of these changes or to implement some of the recommendations, it could be. Now, SOPs, no. But something to do with a system or something like that, I would say yes, it could be. Because then you have to get ITED involved and things like that. There might be other factors is what I'm trying to say.
Okay. Maybe it's just me, but I think, and this is my opinion, I think the city of Jacksonville has operated in a very loose manner compared to how the private sector operates. Now, maybe we operate in according, you know, well within the guidelines of municipalities, but for an audit to have been done in 2018, the follow-up is 2021, and the second follow-up is 2023, that to me just does not seem to be an acceptable practice.
I will say, I mean, we're peer-reviewed. The last several, I don't know how many exactly, at least three, there have been no, we haven't had any concerns. concerns or any problems.
When you say you're peer reviewed, you mean you are we're reviewed by other municipalities or?
Yes. Other auditors will come in and look at our
audits. And if so, here I am coming from the private sector, and I'm thinking this just isn't up to standard, but you're peer reviewed, so what that tells me is the municipalities who are reviewing each other, there's no conformity to how the private sector operates. But that may be an accepted standard among municipalities.
It shouldn't be.
And as a taxpayer, and here we are, you know, the taxation and revenue side of the commission, and then now on the procurement, we're looking at how the money is now going to be utilized. It's just a big cluster, in my opinion, but. Not blaming you. I'm making a general observation about how this organization operates, and we're coming up on 55 years of consolidation. And you know, I was a 19-year-old kid, and I knew Claude Yates and Bill Durden and J.J. Daniel and the men and women. I knew Sally Mathis and Mary Singleton. Those were the people who framed the charter of this government. In the late 60s, mid 60s, leading up to consolidation in 68. And I just remember Claude Yates saying the whole idea behind consolidation was to have a professionally run organization of city employees who delivered value to the residents of Jacksonville. Yeah, I don't think he would have thought 55 years later we're still struggling, so. Anyway, enough of my pontificating.
I won't respond to any of that. But no offense.
I'm just making a historical. I'm trying to put things into the historical context.
Right,
so. Commissioner Day, you're not alone in the way that you feel, because I have felt this way since the very first day I was here, and it's not hard to do a follow up. I don't understand why it takes so long to do it.
Thank you.
Any other questions? That concludes my report.
All right.
Okay.
Sorry. Feel better, Mr. Henry.
Okay, you done with your reports?
That concludes my report, yes, sir.
So on the committees, there was no audit committee meeting today. The legislative, I know that Carter Jones is on it. Who else is on? Anybody? Did y'all have
it? There's a reason.
Okay. Chair's comments. Have you got any comments? Welcome to the meeting.
Okay. No, you guys already knew I was at another you know where I was. I was out, and so I went ahead and came here. No, everything is looking good. Thank you for doing your best to try to talk about your report, your auditor's report, and I understand it's been like that since we've been here. I'm not going to say that's the way it should go, but it's been like that since I've started. Perhaps you can look in the yellow book to find out, you know, what the date, you know, what it should be, the guidelines, but it's been like that since I've been here, not saying it should be. So go ahead and carry on.
Did we have a legislative tracking committee meeting?
No, that's what I said. That's what I was asking.
But so do Carter, we have them?
We have a committee. It's right. Mr. Day and Mr. Carter or Mr. Jones. But it wasn't a meeting.
There was or was not?
Was not.
Not. Okay. So if we wait until next month, it might be too late for some of these.
So let's get to old business. I mean, since we're going over here, is there any old business?
Go ahead. The old business is my request to do a full audit of JTA. You're going to hate me, I know.
Well, through the chair, you're talking about the whole agency of one.
Was that JTA or JEA?
JTA.
Okay.
That's different.
They, as I said, they have a financial audit that's done. It just was released. But as far as our office doing one, that every aspect of it, I mean, as far as compliance and things like that, beyond our office's capability to do that organization like that.
Didn't you tell us last time that they do their own audits or something?
Well, they have a external auditor,
right,
that comes in and does a financial.
Yeah, you
audit.
Guys don't. They have it done.
Right, but we have audit rights, and we have audited various aspects of JTA.
From performance
on a performance audit.
Operational audits, what I call
payroll audits, things like that, accounts payable audits, those type things, and we've done those in the past, but not the entire agency.
So, well, this all came up because of the bill that JTA put forward to adjust their fiscal year 2021 budget by $7 million. They wanted to increase their budget now for that long ago. And, you know, it's, you know, I've got a huge problem with that. You know, first, how in the heck do you spend $7 million over your budget? Where'd that money come from? Without asking for permission to overspend. And why do you keep doing it? Because apparently they've submitted budgets like this, budget amendments like this before. And why does it take them so long to get these budget amendments in? So if they're continuing to go over, but $7 million is a lot of money. Don't tell me it was because of COVID, because I'm not buying that. But that's a lot of money to go over budget, to just spend on your own without asking the city to if that's okay. So where'd they get that money from? How did they spend it? And I think we need to do a little further of an in-depth dive into what they're doing over there.
Yeah, yes, sir.
I don't know the numbers off the top of my head, but I imagine that $7 million is a statistically insignificant portion of their overall budget. They probably spend north of $700 million a year.
Not quite that many. Okay. That's $200 to $300 million.
Okay, so
that includes capital and operational.
Right, but their total.
$100 something million.
So it's probably somewhere around 6%, 5% of their overall budget, which in a statistical analysis would be considered, depending upon your level, your confidence level, a statistically insignificant number.
And I will say,
it's not insignificant as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah, no, but you're right. $7 million is $7 million.
$7 million is a whole lot of money.
The money that JTA gets is from the half cent sales tax. They get the net portion after the bonds for JTA for the BJP plan. Are paid better jacks. They get a portion of the 6 cents local option gas tax. They get a portion of the 5 cents local option gas tax. They get half of the constitutional gas tax, and I think that's all.
Do they receive some funding as from the Florida Department of Transportation?
They do. They received Department of Transportation for the state disadvantaged for people that can't drive and things like that.
Okay.
That money from where it comes from, those are tax dollars that come that are collected by the state and are funneled. The city acts as a conduit, and excuse me, I'm getting over a coughing attack from last weekend. And it comes through the state, through the city's conduit, and to JTA. According to the Florida statutes, JTA has to come to the city council to get their budget approved, which they have to do every July or every October 1, sorry. They have to present their budget to us by June 1. In this case, JTA received more half-cent sales tax than what they estimated to receive. It was somewhere around between $90 and $100 million that they received. So that part, yes, and every quarter they report to us their financials. Okay, we look at them, we go through them, make sure they're correct. All the independents and the city does that. So if we see in their projections, and the projections are an important part of the quarterly summary, that they're projecting to go over, we'll say in our letter or our note, hey, if this holds true, you need to come to an amendment. First two quarters, okay. Third quarter, they really need to start doing that. And I believe at the Finance Committee, I wasn't in town when it happened, but I was able to listen to part of it. I believe the council president...
He was hot.
Let them know he was displeased with it, with the reporting of it. And the fact that there's a budget amendment isn't necessarily the problem. The fact that it takes so long to get it by is the problem. Now, they said they're going to do better. The council president has more weight than my letters to them, and so we'll see. But as far as us, it would be beyond the capabilities of our office. I mean, everything else would have to stop, and I don't know how long it would take us to do that. Because there's so much. Because you've got five divisions, you've got construction, you've got road construction. It would take a while for our. We're just not equipped to do that.
I guess I just maybe I just don't understand how big businesses are running their finances, because I have to know. I know how much money I have coming in every month, and how much money I can spend. And, I can't afford to overspend by 6% even sometimes, whatever the percentage is, And the fact that they are just overspending willy-nilly, that $7 million is taxpayer money. They have a set budget that they are supposed to adhere to. And without some set really good reason to spend $7 million more than what they were allotted, I think that's a problem.
Well, typically what happens is their revenues have come in above what was budgeted. So that's why they don't there was not borrowing money, and they're not moving money around to expend the money. It's just they were allocated revenues from some source, that money was allocated for a reason, and then they spent the money.
They had some additional expenditures because it part of it was COVID. They had to clean the buses. They had to buy all this stuff. They had to buy protection material for the drivers. They had to pay not only overtime but hazard pay to the drivers per union rules to do this. So there was a lot of extra expenses that happened, and I'm not arguing with you. I'm not making excuses for them. I agree that when they, believe me, we would love nothing better than when they go over by a dollar or before they even go over by a dollar, they're coming to city council. Hopefully the message was received from the council president. And, you know.
Is to the chair, is there anything that this commission can do?
Well, we can't do if like we have other people, other individuals or companies, what have individuals they can appoint to come by. We can do that and have them discuss, you know, what's going on with the budget. What have you. But hopefully, sounds like it's in the president's the council president's hand, which is good, but we can't. I was going to recommend that if you want to, if we like, not just you, but want someone, a personnel from the JTA to come by, and we have, you know, discuss different, whatever it is, budgets, what have you, we can do that. We can invite them to come by.
Well, I mean, having somebody come and discuss it is fine, but that doesn't mean anything's going to change.
Right, right. But I mean, we're not going to change it. No. We're not going to change it ourselves. We can't make it happen, but we can. Right, exactly. We can't make the change.
We're not going to change it overnight, that's for sure. Can we move on beyond that? So everybody got the bills in your email. Is there any other bills that?
No bills other than the pending legislation for changing the procurement code, which is big.
Right. Yeah.
I'd like to bring that up under new business.
Through the chair, I just had general questions about some of the bills that were in there.
Well, let's be on new business then.
Mm-hmm. When we get to new business.
So I think we're done with old business. How about new business? Okay, Commissioner Day.
So looks like the first item is the bylaws revision. It's my understanding that this was brought up at the October meeting, and it was voted down.
Correct.
Right. So we're bringing it back. I'm sorry, died for lack of second.
Okay. Right.
So we're bringing it back for another attempt.
Is that where we are, Jeff?
So I think that since Carter Jones is not here and Mr. Henry just left, I think we should wait till December.
I have no problem with that, but I would like to address the issue. All right. If you will look at the bylaws under which we currently operate, they are dated November 18th. 2003, 20 years ago, I made an attempt to clean up the language. I don't know who wrote these, but, you know, I minored in English at JU, and I just get OCD about grammar. So I tried to clean up some of the grammar. The substantive part was the language said 12 members of the commission, but there are 18 members of the commission, so I just changed that to be all to incorporate any future increase or decrease in the size of the commission. The other substantive point was creating two vice chair positions, one for revenue and taxation and one for utilization of expenditures. And the reason is I anticipate that Council President Salem is going to appoint the full allotment of six positions. He has one more position, able to appoint one more position. And then I understand, I think Daniel will be departing under a new appointment. So that I think that he will appoint. I don't know where the mayor is. I mean, I do know I have a friend who applied to be appointed by the mayor. I have no idea where they are. I don't even know if they know where they are. The reason I was trying to restructure the vice chair positions is I think that if we can get, and we still have two CPAC positions that we have to bring up, if we can get up to the full 18, I think then we're able to sort of begin dividing up this massive operation called City of Jacksonville and trying to attack it in a more, you know, systematic manner. So that was the reason I submitted the revisions that I did. So we have no problem with bringing this back to the commission in December.
Through the chair, may I just ask a question? I apologize because I didn't really look that closely at 57. It says that under Article 3, 57.102, that they shall be residents of the city. Should that be the county?
Because could somebody at Jacksonville Beach, they would
technically be- consolidated city of Jacksonville includes the county. So I have no problem if you would like to next month, won't you bring that up as an amendment and we can bring it up? Because I actually noticed there's a couple of mistakes I didn't catch that I will.
I'm not
suggesting
you missed a mistake.
But no. I have no pride of authorship. I was just trying to, you know, the term chairman and, you know, just trying to make it, I was trying to break, modernize the language, yeah.
Right.
Modernize the language.
So. May I, as chair, yeah, so you made a statement about, I'm gonna kind of cut it short because I know it's going to get dark outside. I'm part way far away. You said a revision, last revision was 2003?
2003 is what it says.
It seemed like 23.
No.
2003.
Okay, because it seemed like it on the pat. We've done it a couple of years ago before you came back. It seemed like we made some revisions.
Yeah, well, this was the only thing that Jeff was able to send me. So,
we've done some more under, I think it was, what was his name? Merrill? He was on that, our committee? Merrill? Remember he resigned?
No, Mr. Merrill.
Mr.
Commissioner Merrill.
We have
his first name.
Right. He did some revision. Yeah. It could be something like that. That could be
might
him.
Have been,
but yeah. I remember it had been revisited before, and there were some changes was made. And so when you said 2003, mm-hmm. I was like, no, because I wasn't here.
Well, maybe they were never adopted by the commission, or they were never submitted.
Maybe it wasn't submitted, but some. But I know we had made some changes so. Previously, but I won't keep knocking on it. We could send it out again and make sure, because he's new, and we welcome you to, you know, look at it as well, and we will bring it back again about discussing it some more and making some more changes.
Yeah, in December we'll discuss. I mean, there's a couple changes I want to see. And the thing that I see, the very last article, is whatever is or isn't approved at some given time, if two-thirds of the committee wants to make a change, it looks to me like you can do it.
We can put it on the agenda. Sure. Yeah. All right.
So we don't have very long, Commissioner Pryor. You got a couple of issues there? You got about 12 minutes.
So
I've got to get on
I don't even know if these are things that
six.
This commission should even take up or not. So
be careful.
There's a couple of resolutions here, 2023-715 and 755. They are both to do a fast track approval with a confidential company, and so I just have a couple of questions, like why fast track this? What's the reason for that? Why not disclose the company?
Which bill was it?
715 and 755.
Are these economic incentive bills?
Yes.
They're always secret. Until the very last minute. It's an industry practice done through economic development agencies because the firms want to remain private, and state law allows this.
Okay. It's like some of this is me learning.
Mm-hmm.
So
that's all right. That's why we're here.
The one bill gives a return on investment, but the other doesn't. Is that normal? Is it?
Yeah.
Negotiate.
Come on, Jeff. You gave a ROI on one and not the other. What's up with that? But is there a reason to fast track? Why do they?
It can be competitive pressures. There may be somebody sitting out there that wants to bring 5,000 jobs to Jacksonville, and we're not going to. In my opinion, I wouldn't say no.
It was a total of 400 new jobs.
Well, that's 400 new jobs. Okay. We've got 20,000 people a year moving here now. And they have to have jobs.
Like I said, some of these are just questions on my part. So,
okay.
The next one is 720, which is a CIP amendment, where they are moving money from three CIP projects to other projects. They're moving it from projects that were under budget to ones that went over budget,
mm-hmm.
And so. You know, some things that immediately come to mind is, like, why did the projects that they're moving the money to go over budget?
That's why the City Council Finance Committee has oversight authority. Whether or not the committee is exercising that oversight authority, I don't know.
Right, but so So help me out here. What are we supposed to do here then?
Well, that go back and read the ordinance that creates us. We have relatively broad latitude, but I think my sense is that there has been a practice over the years, and we have sat here and listened to the council auditor reports and occasionally listened to an agency, and that's pretty much it. I don't know if you go back a few years, I don't know how many people were on the commission. I was on the first true commission in 1988, and I believe there were at least 19 of us. I think every council member appointed a commissioner.
Through the chair, just to let you know, believe it or not, I didn't even realize this until I almost retired from the city. They have a change order log. They have a one book that tracks every project, and for every change order that's approved, they show you the amount, and they actually assign why it's there, whether it's design, it's contractor. So there is a tracking document, at least there was in 2006, that would answer every question as to why a project was over budget.
Interesting. So anyway, no. Wait till we get commissioner comments.
724 talks about authorization of bond issues, declaration that debt issuances or limited obligations of the JEA. And again, it's me learning here. So JEA has a huge surplus. Why are they needing to increase their borrowing power?
I understand that JEA is expanding their borrowing capacity in anticipation of expansion of capacity. They build into their projections a 1% growth in meters, which is about right. If we're growing at roughly 2% a year, you assume there's maybe 2.5 to 3 people per household, which you back that back. And the 1% is probably about right. And so they have to project out what is going to be the capital needs to fund the plant expansion and construction. And a lot of this is being driven by the water side, not just the electricity side. But if you combine the overall sphere of operations of JEA on the electric and the utilities, and there's one other area, I forget.
Sewer.
What I don't know, this is from the news. It said that the JEA is about to take a big hit because of Plant Vogtle in Georgia. Yep. So we have some big multi-million dollar they have a multi-million
maybe they have
dollar
to maybe there's a capital call or something
up,
yeah,
because we're starting to take anyway. Nuclear power.
Yeah, so I'm on the North CPAC, and somebody from JEA 2 months ago, I guess, was there, and they talked about that, about the very thing about Plant Vogtle.
Jay Stowe came to our CPAC. He probably came to yours.
Who it was.
Yeah.
I appreciate y'all's understanding on this. Yeah. 759 is from neighborhoods, but approval of economic development forgivable loan, waiver of the Northeast Jacksonville Economic Development Fund guidelines.
Mm-hmm.
I'm a huge proponent of not waiving something unless there's a really good reason. And I looked this, I don't see a reason why that they are going to waive, it said that the requirements are waived to permit project funding in excess of the percentage allowed under the guidelines. So I'm like, why are they waiving this? And it's for $500,000 in a forgivable loan given to First Coast No More Homeless Pets,
mm-hmm.
which I don't have a problem with the money, but it doesn't say where the money's coming from. But why are we waiving the guidelines? I'd like to know where the money's coming from. It doesn't say.
Probably should look into the City Council Finance Committee agenda and look at their recordings. Jeff, would those minutes reflect, all of these have had to come before the City Council Finance Committee?
It hasn't yet. It hasn't come to anything.
Okay.
This is part of the new ones that just came out.
So I would just track that, and if you look at the bill summary, mm-hmm. it may explain why.
That's what this is.
That's the bill summary on the. You pulled the bill summaries, okay? But it doesn't answer the question.
No.
Okay, then If there's a gentleman named Jeff Clements, and it's all kind of stuff.
Analyst on it, yeah.
Kim, how many more do you got? We only got a couple of minutes.
Just two. 764, appropriation for special events programming. And give $284,000 from the Mayor's Task Force Contingency Fund to the Special Events Martin Luther King Jr. Activities Budget to support MLK Week 2024 programming. I had a couple of questions. Is this new? If not, how much should they get last year? What will this be spent on? Are there any restrictions?
Well, I do know that next year we're going to have one combined breakfast, not two separate breakfasts, and there could be some expenses related to that. I don't know, other than what the bill summary might tell you. Who sponsored the bill? Is this at the request of the mayor?
Council President Salem at the request of the mayor.
I'd call the mayor's office. Anytime you have that, just call the mayor's office.
Okay.
That's where it originated.
The last one is 766, again, at the request of the mayor. $1.8 million to buy that damn liquor store over on Gulf Air.
Yep.
Well, they tried for $500,000. That didn't work. So now we're at 1.8.
Yep. And it's then they also say that they're going to acquire the site and develop a community center for the Brentwood area. So if the property is $1.8 million, where's the money coming from to build the community center? Because they certainly didn't address it in this bill.
If you go to the news says they're going to use it to extend the medical examiner's office, the coroner's office.
Yeah, but they,
that's the big fight on what they're really going to use the property for.
Right.
Yeah. So it's, I mean.
Tune into the city council meetings.
They're
there's a lot of.
It. They already got it.
That's where the work is done. So. Mm-hmm. Watch the city council meeting recordings. They're fascinating. Especially the committee meetings.
I wouldn't watch it because it will keep you from going to sleep.
I've been to my share. And just so
you're gonna make a comment.
We don't do anything with these.
I'll go around the comments. Get to you.
Mr. Davey, said as part of just new business, naturally I've lived with the purchasing code since 1988. I've heard what they said. My inclination would be to, I know Lasicki. I've got a case with Lasicki. Again, that's concerning me now. If I call her up, you know, what, I need a training here to see what I can do because I wear different hats. And I know
that we can't discuss anything outside the meeting, so you're going to kind of have to just get up to speed on your own. I called Jeff when I came on the commission. He gave me a quick overview, and, you know, in 15 minutes, you're an expert.
Well, my inclination would be is to contact all the past people my clap saddles is now over at Gate and then Lewis and those folks and put them together with him. It'd be my intention to go over to Lasicki to say, what are y'all doing over? Because I handled most of those contracts.
You can talk to anybody outside. We just can't talk among ourselves.
Oh, okay.
So there's actually supposed to be an onboarding committee because I read all the rules and the bylaws. I wasn't onboarded. So maybe we can talk to the chairman next meeting and create a committee. Now, it has to be in a meeting setting. We can't go to McDonald's and do it, but you could have new people and with some experienced people to come together and have a meeting with the onboarding to talk about what you do. Because when I read all the rule or the policy procedure, I'm like, well, it got to drop the ball on that one.
Everybody's got a handbook, and they sell them. The school board has its own. Everybody's got their own.
Yeah, we got one.
We have one?
I'm not sure.
I'm talking about different governmental entities. The fact they don't talk to each other is something that I think we should precipitate and require them to get together.
I'm assuming that Jeff must have emailed it to me. I don't know where I got it. So maybe he can email everybody a copy. And you'll see there's an onboarding committee, and maybe we can get one formed, and some of you guys who have been around for a while can come teach us younger folks what to do. So if that's it for new business, we'll go to comments. Mr. Carter, you got anything else to say? Mr. Zambuni?
Well, I've already said more than my amount of time. Just good to meet you all, and hopefully
you
know, I can learn from y'all, and we'll have some fun and make a difference here.
I just want to say that I'm hoping that we can make a difference. I don't know exactly if the council listens to any of this, if they listen to CPACs, if they listen to anything, but maybe. I mean, you know, with grace of God, maybe they'll start listening to some of these committees. And also, guys, I want to wish you all a happy Thanksgiving and happy holidays, and be safe out there.
Well, can I just suggest this?
Yes, sir.
They do listen to the council auditors. If we can make a strong enough statement, and you talk to the council auditor, you know, I know there were some statements made that were strong. I've been around it. And the council auditors, when I was here, are outstanding, and I put them up against anybody else's. I agree, things take time, but, you know, auditing also takes money and time, and they're busy doing other things. So we will work together to make Jacksonville better and stay friendly here, and look forward to working with y'all.
I just wanted to say I missed the September and October meetings. The September meeting, my wife was in the hospital. The October meeting, she was in hospice. She did pass away, and I look forward to getting back into a full swing of things. And this is a good cause. We're fighting a good battle, so don't give up. It's just going to take a while.
Who are we fighting? Is the question.
We're fighting for. We're not fighting against.
Sorry to hear about your wife.
Thank you. Yeah.
Yeah.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Any closing arguments?
I don't have anything else. I will unfortunately not be able to attend December's meeting. I will be out of town.
Jeff, you
have
got
Thanksgiving
anything?
To you all too. Jeff?
Jeff, you got anything? So the next meeting, second. December 7th, and the iCloud update from Paul Freeman will be here. Is there a move?
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
We're closed. Drive safe, guys.